When it's time to seed grass, fertilize turf, or add a pop of color to your yard, Blaine's Farm and Fleet's got you covered with unbeatable deals on lawn and garden essentials. Find value on everything you need in-store or online at farmandfleet.com.
Today, many farmers are discovering new ways to showcase their produce and connect with consumers. From the traditional farm stands that we see on the side of the road to online marketplaces and everything in between, that integration of that value-added product really stands out. But along this journey, that can be a hard path to really navigate and even know what market strategy is best for you. I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report, and Paul Dittman, Director of Emerging Markets at Compere Financial, says it doesn't have to be. He shares some of the tips on how to best market your farm products.
There are a number of different ways that farmers are marketing the products. We have people who are using community-supported agriculture, which is like a subscription type of a setup. We have people that are doing online marketing. We have people doing agritourism, bringing people out to the farm. There's a whole host of different ways of marketing products.
What role do value-added products play into kind of helping them with their branding of the merchandise and diversifying their farm revenue to kind of help them attract new customers?
You know, adding value through either further processing. We have a lot of people who are marketing meat direct to consumers, so they're working with a local meat processing plant, having those animals harvested and sold as retail. We have people who are doing other types of on-farm processing, selling prepared products like jams and pickles and all those sorts of things. So those types of products are really popular with consumers right now, especially the connection directly to the farm. That really picked up during COVID, I would say. We had people early in COVID that were going to the grocery store and there was no meat in the counter and there were a lot of things missing on the store shelves. They started looking for local farmers that might have those products and built these relationships that I think have really taken off since then.
And you did mention the CSA, the Community Supported Agriculture Options. What advice do you have for farmers who are interested in starting a CSA?
CSA can be a bit of a challenging model because a lot of those folks are growing 40, 50, 60 different types of vegetables, and they have to put a box together every week and serve that client base. Fortunately, here in Wisconsin, we have a great resource, and that's Fair Share CSA Coalition. So that's an organization that's based here in Madison that works with CSA growers and helps them really with all sorts of marketing and the finances and many different types of relationships. So that model is great because it usually provides cash flow up front. You know, the people pay for their subscriptions usually January, February, March, and then the farmers have money to put into the products that they're growing, and they're growing maybe delivering a box for 20 weeks out of the year. We've seen people doing some more creative things too and putting together winter boxes where it might be storage vegetables that are being delivered after the regular growing season has ended here in Wisconsin, or adding on value-added products. I've got a couple people that are doing meat CSAs where they're doing once a month deliveries into the city of Chicago. And maybe they deliver to one location and that one person who takes the meat into their garage or whatever it is, they're selling to other people in the neighborhood and maybe they get a little bit of a discount on their purchases. But it's been a great model because I mean, you could be anywhere. If you only have to make a delivery once a month, it's not too much trouble, right?
Yeah, that sounds like a great option if you've got that extra produce or just want to kind of connect the consumers with your products even more. Another thing that comes to mind is direct marketing through whether that's farm-to-table restaurants, different food companies, co-ops, grocery stores. You know, how can they work with those types of relationships or establish them even?
Those relationships, sometimes they're a bit difficult to establish. A number of years ago, we worked on a project. We were trying to get produce into restaurants in the Dells. Seems like it makes a lot of sense. You know, the busiest time, of course, is in the summer. It's the time when you've got a lot of produce. And we made connections with restaurants, with chefs. And the chefs were really excited about buying this great local produce, really fresh, delivered the same day it's picked or the next day, whatever it is. But what ended up happening was a lot of those restaurants aren't owned by the chefs. And that chef might be there for a season or two, and then they leave. And now a new chef comes in and you have to try to rebuild that relationship. Or the restaurant owner is saying, wait a minute, we could have bought this from our wholesaler for half the price that you're paying to this farmer from Reedsburg. Why don't you just buy from our wholesaler like we buy everything else? So there can be some tricky relationships built there, but they also can be really strong relationships. There are some restaurants in Chicago that have been buying from the same farmer for 20 years, you know, and just love the product that they can get. And there's enough dialogue back and forth that the chef can say, you know what, we'd really like to try this vegetable. Can you grow that on your farm? And they'll actually contract for that.
Are there certain considerations to keep in mind then when they're like negotiating those types of agreements or contracts? How to even start that conversation? Like, hey, I've got this produce. Come buy mine instead of your wholesaler like you were talking about.
Yeah, probably the number one thing is just figuring out what the quantity is. And of course, price, obviously. But the quantity is really critical. You know, you have to be able to deliver what you say you're going to deliver and deliver it when you say you're going to be able to deliver it. And of course, with agriculture, how do you know whether we're going to have a drought like we had last year or when you're going to have a flood or when you're going to have an infestation of leafhoppers or whatever it is that's going to take your crop out? So making sure that you have the ability to produce what you say you can produce and deliver it in a timely fashion.
I also think, you know, there's, when you think of Wisconsin, you think dairy farmers, you think the cheese, you think all of those dairy products. There's obviously more to it. We are number one in a lot of different products and commodities. But how can farmers then differentiate themselves when there are so many potentially of that same product on the market?
It's very much relationship based. It's knowing the farm. It's making that connection, whether it's the consumer or a chef or a retail grocery store or whatever it is. That relationship is so critical. You know, I have people that I ask, well, should I become certified organic? Certified organic is great, but if you have that direct connection to your buyer, may not be that critical. You know, they trust you as the farmer to do what you say you're going to do or produce the way that you say you produce and the practices that you use. There's a high level of trust there. And that's really the differentiating factor, I'd say, is that level of trust.
Yeah, you mentioned that the storytelling, that branding, that customer engagement is really important. How just important is all of that in attracting that repeat business by making sure that they do trust you?
It is really important. Yeah, it's really critical. It's the way that you drive a customer away is say, I've got this product, I'll deliver it next week, and then you don't show up. And once you've broken that trust, you're done. You're not going to get that relationship back. So it's building that relationship, doing what you say you're going to do. And most people do. And customers also understand on the other side of it that we do have all these vagaries in production. We may not have certain crops because we had insects that survived the winter that typically wouldn't survive. Or we had a late frost that takes out a crop that we thought we'd have. So, and buyers understand that.
How can farmers use educational events, whether that's bringing farm tours to their farm, or you mentioned agritourism experiences? Those can help showcase their products, but also educate consumers at the same time. How is that working out for people?
It's been working really well. If you've got the personality for it and you like having people come out to the farm, and there are a lot of people who do, it can be great. I mean, it can be a very profitable thing. And it's an important service, too, because it's teaching people about agriculture who maybe are two or three generations removed from it.
What other tips do you have to even just get started? I've got my product. How do I go from now having it on my farm to being able to market this in that different capacity?
I'd say first, start small. Don't produce so much that now all of a sudden you've got to go out and really push your product to get it out the door. Start small, build a small customer base, figure out what they like, what they don't want. A farmer's market is actually a great place to start. You can put a lot of products out on your table and you can figure out what sells and what doesn't in your market. And markets can be really different. You know, what sells in the Baraboo farmer's market may be something that doesn't sell at all at the Hilldale market. It can be very different, even though the customer base isn't that far apart. So starting out that way, it's inexpensive, relatively easy. It's a bit of a grind, but you can do it. And then start moving towards increasing your product selection, maybe bringing things more to the farm. At some point, maybe further down the road, you build a farm store or something. You know, I've seen a few people do that.
Are there certain resources or things out there that you recommend these farmers go gravitate towards if they do need that extra help?
Yeah, there's a lot of help in Wisconsin, fortunately, because we have a lot of people who are doing this. We're sort of ahead of the curve. I do some work in Illinois, too. Illinois is coming on strong, but they're behind us. I'd say they're almost a decade behind us where we are with direct marketing. We've got Extension. We've got the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, which has their Ag Development Division. They do a lot of work with direct market farmers through the Something Special from Wisconsin program and other things. We have a lot of farmers who are doing this already. We've got some great conferences. There are lots and lots of resources in the state of Wisconsin to help with this.
You mentioned Wisconsin is kind of ahead of the curve. Do you have any rough estimate, like number-wise, that you could showcase of just how many people are actually doing this already?
I can tell you, we started our emerging markets loan program 6.5 years ago, specifically for this segment of agriculture, people marketing things direct to consumers or doing something in value-added production processing marketing. We started with zero in our portfolio. Today, we're over $31 million in the portfolio. We've made over 300 loans under emerging markets. And we're not the only ones within our organization that are making loans to this segment of agriculture. It's really taken off. And again, especially since COVID. You know, we had a couple of my clients were part-time before COVID, were working full-time off-farm, got laid off from their off-farm jobs, which gave them time to really focus on their farm business, and just never went back to work again. They had built it up to the point they didn't need to go back to work. So it's an exciting time. I mean, this is really, it's really kind of on the edge of agriculture right now. I'd say on the leading edge of agriculture.
Is there anything else when it comes to the trends that you've seen then in those 6+ years, give or take, or even just what you're kind of seeing gravitating now for the future of where it's going to go?
Yeah, we're starting to see some of the pioneers in this world that are getting to the point where they're ready to retire. And so we're transitioning some of those businesses to a new generation, which may or may not be a member of their family. We've seen an increase, I'd say, in the amount of value-added processing and scalable processing, you know, where you can start at a relatively small scale. We've seen a few on-farm meat processing plants come in. We've seen some of our other meat processing plants expand. That's been a bottleneck, has been, especially in meat processing, I would say. It's even though Wisconsin has more small-scale state-inspected meat processing plants than any other state in the country, we still don't have quite enough capacity. And so we're seeing that sort of built up. And yeah, I would say, you know, one of the things that we've seen in the last few years is we're starting to see more second, third, fourth generation farms where they're bringing the next generation in. And in the past, they would expand their farm. They would buy more land. They would put up another freestall barn, add more cows. Everything is so expensive right now that those options aren't quite as popular as they used to be. And so we're starting to see more of that next generation come in. And in order to generate the cash flow that they need to sustain themselves on the farm and make a living, they're starting to look at value-added products. I find that really exciting. It's a whole different mindset. And it's been interesting to see the dance, too, between the older generation that's on the farm that's been producing commodities, and then the younger generation comes in and says, we're going to start direct marketing beef. It's just a whole different way of doing things, but it can be very profitable, and it opens up opportunities for another generation to join.
That was Paul Dittman, Director of Emerging Markets at Compeer Financial, along with us. He added that one of the great things is that there are a lot of resources for beginning farmers, especially beginning farmers who are interested in doing this type of agriculture that we've been talking about, that direct-to-consumer value-added product. Look for links to these in the article on our website. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.